Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I do agree that blah, blah, blah. It's all very good. Wonderful.
That's fine. Well, I thought what I'd really quickly do for soundcheck is I'd ask you one of the Twitter questions you got asked.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because none of them were what I would call legitimate questions.
No, of course they wouldn't be.
Well, you'd be surprised. Sometimes they are, but okay. Will there be any more time waster letters?
No.
Okay. Well, that was a good soundcheck. There is.
Well, I can't write them anymore.
Why not?
Because when I did them, the internet wasn't such a big thing. And I wasn't really Googleable, as in the character Robin Cooper. Now, and also people used to kind of write letters. Now no one writes letters. So if you get a letter from a mad person, they just think, who's that? And they Google them. They go, oh, it's a prankster.
Right.
Oh, it's such a shame. I enjoy doing those.
You could always get people to send you anonymous stuff.
What, you mean to a different name?
Yeah,
but then if I then changed it to Robin Cooper afterwards, I feel like I'm cheating. Do you know what I mean? I thought that, and then I feel like kind of sort of cheated them a bit.
Okay.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah,
well, there we are.
Hello, and welcome to the Ask the Industry podcast, episode 56. My name's Simon Kane, and for those of you new to the show, this is the podcast where I interview the most influential people from the worlds of stand-up, comedy, radio, and today, TV. Robert Popper is a British comedian, producer, writer, actor, author, and he's best known for the co-creator of the mock BBC documentary Look Around You and the creator of Channel 4's sitcom Friday Night Dinner. I got him on the podcast to talk about how you make it in TV, how he got his start in the business, and how long it takes to have a TV show actually made, and pretty much everything in between. We also got chatting about his future projects, as well as if TV is a closed door to new writers. So if you're interested in any of those things, you're in the right place. If you're enjoying this podcast, please do remember to subscribe. It really helps out, and it means that you get it direct into your podcast player of choice. Also, give me an honest rating in iTunes. They're really helping out our future guests and making a massive difference to the show itself. Without any more delays, this is Robert Popper.
My first job in TV was writing 40 Towers. No, it was working at the comic strip with Peter Richardson. I worked and as he used to make loads of amazing comic strip films in the 80s and 90s, I guess. And I worked with him as his runner originally. And then I became his sort of assistant and kind of did like everything and sort of learned how to write a bit, watched him write, sat and wrote with him a bit. Did like dog's body stuff, like had to shovel donkey shit up on set. That was nice. That was my first job. It was brilliant. Yeah, comic strip was fun. It was kind of like stepping into Sesame Street. Right. It was just kind of higgledy-piggledy, crappy offices where when you flush the loo, you had to stand back about 6 feet because the water would come out the loo.
Right.
Yeah, it was pretty good. And then people like Kate Bush and Jeff Beck would turn up because he was friends with them. So it was pretty like, ooh, wow, they're famous. That was my first job. It was pretty cool.
And how old were you at that point?
I was 13. I was about 26 when I started.
Okay. And what were you doing prior?
Before. Yeah. I was playing guitar.
Really?
Yeah. I left uni and I was probably 25 when I started. I always wanted to be a musician.
Right.
And I played with like buddies in a band and we just used to spend our time arguing. It was brilliant. So I thought, oh, I don't want to do this anymore.
Right.
So I stopped and I thought, well, I like sort of comedy and being silly.
Sort of.
I'm going to do that. Yeah, I like being silly, basically. Yeah. So, I was, and it was kind of at the same time when Alan Partridge was on the radio, and I thought, oh, this is great. I really like this stuff. I want to do something interesting and get into that world.
Fair enough.
And you just put your glasses on very, it was just sort of very seriously then.
It's because I'm short-sighted and the text is not readable for
right,
me.
Right, it's so, 4 points, it's tiny.
It's 12 Avril. Huh? I normally go to Homer, that's my chosen font.
I just boringly do Helvetica.
Do you?
Mm.
Oh, okay. I'm a Verdana when I'm feeling really frisky.
And a Comic Sans when you need when a little lift. When I don't want friends. Your emails to me were all in Comic Sans.
Were they? No. What, one minute. I was like, because do you know what? Because I got an email back from someone recently saying you use like the too big of a font.
Oh.
Because I do, because by default, because my glasses, I just have it like that. And sometimes I forget to adjust
48.
It. 48. Yeah, before I hit.
Times Roman.
It's quite a big. No, it is.
Right, right. I'll have to check, go back and check.
But they were quite annoyed.
Maybe they were big, actually. Actually, yeah, I think maybe, yeah.
All right. Fair enough. I just don't... Like, it's one of those things where, you know when, like, one person comments on it, you think, oh, that's all right. But when, like, three or four people comment on it,
300
you think,
people comment.
Yeah, you think, are people talking about me?
They are.
My back? Oh, they are.
Yeah. Simon's big font Kane.
All they're saying in the industry is, you got his fucking big font email. Bloody annoying. Yeah. Okay, so you started out as sort of a dog's body runner type researcher role, and you've pretty much, I would say, done most roles in the industry from what I've seen on your IMDb page.
Not makeup, but...
No, okay. Well, I mean, I was going to say, given your IMDb role listing, if I go through what you're listed as, can you define what these roles are?
Yes.
In terms of what you did slash maybe what you applied to do, because that isn't always the same thing.
Yes.
Okay, so producer.
Yes.
What's that?
Okay. Well, I think there were different. So I produce Look Around You, Friday Night Dinner, and so I wrote and produced Friday Night Dinner, Look Around You, and produced Peep Show. And so my role as a producer, every producer is different. So there are producers that kind of you run the production. There are some that just kind of do all the logistic stuff. Normally, that's done by someone called a line producer. This sounds boring, but maybe it's interesting. What I do as a producer, and everyone does it differently, but I creatively run the show. So I make sure that the show has got the right vision behind it and everything fits together nicely. So the scripts, you produce the scripts. Mm-hmm. So you work on the scripts with the writers. You just go through the stories with the writers if you're, say, working on Peep Show, say. Mm-hmm. And you cast it. You're there, you do the rehearsals with the director, you're there with the director. I'm sort of quite very hands-on, so I'll be there, say, work with a director called Becky Martin on Peep Show, the second series I did with her. She's great, she's just very collaborative, so she doesn't mind me going, oh, do you think that's right, maybe we should do it again, or blah, blah, blah. So you're kind of doing that, and then sitting in the edit, and just being in the edit every day, and editing the thing with the editor and director, and then just making sure the sort of marketing's right, just doing the whole thing from beginning to end. That's kind of what it is. So overseeing creatively.
So kind of overseeing creatively, but it sounds like you're an assistant to everyone else in a way.
What do you mean assistant?
As in like you're working alongside everyone.
Yeah, so every department will come to me and the director and go, here are the clothes, what do you think? Here's the costume. Okay. Oh, I like that. It's maybe rather than blue, could that be yellow? So that's what I do. So on Friday night dinner, it goes to my director, but it all comes, sort of final decisions come to me.
Okay, how does that...
Which is why it's so good.
How does that differ then from being the director?
The director is the man or woman or boy or girl or baby who is physically there behind the camera going, I want this shot now, I want this shot now, and is doing all that stuff. I directed, like, in this series, the last episode of Series 4, Friday Night Dinner, which is fun as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what's an editor then?
An editor is a man or woman who physically knows how to do editing. So while you're filming, every day you send the rushes, all the stuff you've sent, over to the editor, who starts assembling an episode in order. So he'll take this scene and this scene, and gradually he'll, or she, will make an episode, an assembly. So it'll be, I've cut them all together.
Yep.
It's never ready. It's not perfect at all. It's kind of, it's loose and long, so you can see all the kind of different way you could go with it. So say with Friday Night Dinner, it ends up being a 23, 24 minute show. You probably get a 30 minute cut. And often they're like, oh God, it's never really funny till it's finished. But there it is, all shot. And occasionally you might go, oh, we missed that. We need to redo that a little bit occasionally. Or the editor will tell you. And then you go in, when you're finished, you watch all the episodes, and then you'll spend like 6-7 days on each episode, cutting it yourself. Well, that's how I do it. Me, director and editor, going through it and going, oh, maybe that shot here, maybe we need a shot for two of them rather than a single shot. Oh, this could be pacey. Can we just cut all this stuff? We don't need this scene. And that's what you're doing all the pictures with the editor.
So because you've got the script before you even start shooting.
Sure,
and,
yeah.
And you don't necessarily shoot them all in order, as in every scene in order, or every
shot
in order.
No, you wouldn't do that, no.
No. So...
Because, so you say you've got a shot downstairs, and then one they go upstairs, and to move, like, the main thing is the lighting. To move all the equipment takes 40 minutes, then you have to set it all up, so it's a waste. It's all about 6 weeks of planning before you do your shoot, and making sure every move, and we're moving from this room to that room. Do we need to do it there? Do we do it? You have a thing called a first assistant director who plans the whole shoot, schedules it. Well, shoot this first, and this. You kind of try and shoot it in order. Say, or at least you might not do all the episodes in order, but you might say do episode 1, 4, 3, 4, but try. You kind of try and shoot an episode roughly in order. Mainly for the cast, so they can follow their story of their character. But sometimes you just can't, because it's like, well, we now have to drive to here. This is going to take too long. It's best to do this and do it on that day when it's better. Blah 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 blah.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah.
It's quite boring, but it's, you know, it's interesting.
I wouldn't say it's
because
boring.
It's true.
No, I wouldn't say it's
no,
boring.
No, okay, it's not boring.
I have a few friends of mine who are working on online series series.
Siri.
Yeah, I was gonna do that for the edit, but now you've said that, that's way better than what I was gonna do. Yeah, and a lot of them do it in order. I know I do a lot of my cuts in order, just because if I'm there, I do them when I'm there, and then take them home and edit them.
Sure.
So it's interesting that the editor will get them at a different pace and a different, and they'll have to just play around with it as it's coming in.
Well, their job is to compile the episodes. So
What's a creative consultant?
I don't know. What's that?
You were that on South Park.
Apparently. Oh, yeah. that's what you get for being in the writer's room in South Park, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's just a fancy title for a writer.
Writer, yeah. But, I mean, really, the writer is Trey Parker and Matt Stone. Because he, when you're there, he writes the script. You sit in a room and you sort of facilitate his brain with ideas.
Right.
And then he goes off and just writes the scripts, because he's a super genius.
Okay. Mm. Cool. A script consultant.
I think that's another way of saying script editor.
Okay. I'll get rid of that next one then. Program consultant.
I don't know. What is that?
That's what you're listed as on IMDb.
For what show was that?
One minute, I'll have to Google this now, because I didn't write them all down.
Oh, was it on Peter Serafinowicz's show? I bet it was.
Potentially.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it would have been that, maybe.
It's going to take
but
one.
But it is. It's Peter
weird
Serafin,
edit.
It is that.
Hang on. I'll check it now. Because I wrote down some of them and I thought, oh, he'll know this. I don't need to.
I think it is. It is. It's, yeah, it would be that.
It was. Yes, it's Peter's show.
I don't know what that was. I know I wrote on it with him and we're good buddies. And he was very nice, because he would just show me cuts and I sort of say what I thought. And he was nice to say, oh, I'm going to credit you for that, because he's a lovely man.
Okay.
Or woman.
Or infant.
Or infant.
So how would you describe the differences between... So would a writer ever be involved in the script editing, or would you keep those two roles separate?
Well, as a writer, you're editing yourself the whole time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, don't know what you mean by that.
So, say... I can't think of an example. But say, for example, say someone had written a script.
Yeah.
And they said to you, we'd love you to script edit it.
Yeah.
Would you have the final sort of edit of the script, because you're the one that's...
I've done script editing a lot.
Okay, yeah.
So, I don't know, the in-betweeners.
Right.
I do it on lots of shows. Mm. And they send me the scripts and go, here's a script. And I read it a few times and I give them my notes.
Right.
And it's like an additional brain to, say, the producer who is making sure the scripts are perfect. So I'll just give my notes. Oh, on page one, this is a bit boring, this beginning. Do you need this bit? Or, oh, that's a funny joke. Or, how about this, maybe? I was thinking, do you need this bit here? Or, I'm a bit confused why he goes over there when later on he's blah, blah. Are you sure the ending's working? And, you know, right. You give, like, I don't know, 40 notes I might have for a script. And then they'll look at them and maybe do some of them. And then you might get another draft and you might have 15 notes and blah, until you think it's right, but you don't have the final. So you're just like a consultant on it, helping. Okay. It's like, it's quite loud. Can you hear that next door?
I can, yeah, but it's gone now.
Okay, so it's gone. Oh, that was good.
Yeah.
So when I do Friday Night Dinner, I don't have a script editor, but I have one of my exec producers.
Oh,
is brilliant with scripts. What's that music?
That has picked up again. I don't know what that is. Do you know what's blatantly happening? Is it's not picking up on
the
recorder.
Oh, that's good. So the people listening can't hear the music that we're hearing.
No.
Stop now. So she will give me notes. Her name's Caroline Neddy, and she used to produce Bross Eye and used to run Channel 4 Comedy, and she's amazing. So she gives me notes, because I am writing my show in a room and you get so close to it, you just can't see, is this funny, is this right, is this working?
Yeah.
And then she'll read it And she can say, oh, I've got that. I didn't like this. I didn't. And so, and she gives us notes also on the edit as well. So we'll give her, do a cut, send it to her. We'll get 50 notes from her and we'll do those. And she'll come in and sit again. It's just, you need someone like that, I think, who's distanced from it.
That's essentially kind of part of what my day job is. Remember before I was telling you I write social media copy
for the British National Party. Yeah. For the,
essentially. You said we wouldn't talk about that. So essentially they bring me in because they've had meeting after meeting after meeting where it all makes sense to them because they, as a marketing campaign, they've spent ages on it. But then when I come in, I'm like, I've got no idea what you're on about because I've not had these 5 hour long meetings where they've talked about stuff. I mean, for me, the problem in that situation is trying to stay out of the writing element of it, because if they send me something over, I'll immediately sort of try and rewrite it to understand.
Yeah, of course.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
Do you ever find yourself like slipping into a writer role?
Sometimes a little bit, but maybe they, as a script editor, they kind of like the fact that you can write, I guess. Mm. So sometimes you go, oh, I'm not sure about this. How about this for a line? Is this, are you sure the line's right here? Could it be like this? So I wouldn't rewrite loads of things, but I might suggest things, and either they go for them or they don't.
Okay, yeah. No, that's the same with me.
Yeah, yeah.
More often than not, they go, no, we're good.
Yeah.
Like, well, you brought me in. So you started out as sort of the dog's body runner type thing, and then you progressed on to...
Then I worked there for a few years, three years. Then I went to the Big Breakfast.
You played Zig and Zag,
I did some writing on Zig and Zag, the two puppets. And then I worked in the development department where I don't know if I developed anything. And then I just worked on the Big Breakfast. I can't remember what I did there. Yeah, just lots of stuff.
I feel like we should just talk about Zig and Zag. They were my favourites.
They were good, yeah. I filmed them with my grandma, who kept calling because she was like... She was originally from, like, East Europe. And she kept calling them... She hello, Zig and Jack. I said, Zig and Zag. Zig and Jack. Zig and Zag. Zig and Jack. So that was funny. She didn't really know what was going on.
No, not at all. My nan keeps saying that my job's a social worker, which is nowhere near what I'm doing. And it's got worse since the dementia's got worse.
That's fantastic.
It would be if she didn't keep introducing me to every nurse there going, this is my son, he's a social...
Do you just cough in the word media?
I've just let her do it. But then I have to explain to a lot of nurses that, I'm not a social worker.
Social worker.
It's nowhere near that. It's not even like my job
is... nowhere near.
No. But yeah, okay. So, what was it like writing for puppets then? Out of interest, or did you just look at them as other characters?
I can't remember what I cannot remember what we did really. But it was just sort of silly ideas. From them. They were really, really funny guys that did it. It was funny. You know, you watch it and you just become a kid again. You know what I mean? When you're watching the little puppets doing their puppety things, it was it was fun. It was good. Yeah, yeah. I remember the funny story when I was working on the Big Breakfast was. Vanessa Feltz was working at one point, and it was like her last day, and this is true because I saw it, and she was leaving, and I don't know if she was upset with the producer or something, I can't remember his name, but we were in the canteen afterwards, because when you worked on the Big Breakfast, you were assigned, like, you're working on Tuesday show, you work the whole night through the day before, so you don't sleep, it's awful, it's so tiring. And then you go in at 4 in the morning and you start the show at 6 and it finishes at 9. I was researching on it. I was terrible. I never knew what was going on. Just didn't. It was so not me. It was useless. And I remember getting told off for myself and Andrew Newman, who's like a producer. He produced The Word and Chris Morris. He's brilliant. And, worked with Ali G show and stuff like that. I used to run Channel 4 Comedy. We got told off once for intentionally making the weirdest Big Breakfast show ever. Because we had it with mini horses we brought into the house, quite a lot of them, and we just intentionally made it really weird, the show.
Right.
But that was fun. But she was really obviously annoyed with this producer, and it was her last day, and I witnessed it with my eyes. We were in the canteen after the show when you're exhausted, because you haven't slept for 25 hours or whatever, having disgusting baked beans or whatever. She was in the canteen queue, and she asked for a plate of baked beans. And said, anything else? I said, no, just can you give me some more? Hot baked beans. They piled her plate up with loads of baked beans. She went up to the producer who was sitting there, and I can't remember his name, but she said whatever his name was. He turned around and she poured the whole lot all over his head. He was in like a suit. Everyone saw it. The whole place went quiet. and he just stood up. He was like burning hot beans, silently, and walked out with beans dripping. And then later on, I saw him with sort of quite a red face, probably from the bean, the heat, in like a tracksuit. He'd obviously changed. And that was the last he saw. Like, it was like her last day. Obviously, something happened. It was brilliant. Amazing. That was the best thing I saw on that show. It's one of the best things I've ever seen in TV, that.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if it's your last day...
Why not?
Go mad.
That's what I'd recommend. I mean, beans.
Yeah.
Beans.
As long as it's nothing else like boiling water or...
No. No. Kettle of water.
Yeah. Or like dropping a toaster in their bath or something. Oh, you know, just, you know...
Just bean. Keep it beans.
Beans is... Rob Popper, do you know what, Rob or Robert?
You can call me Robert.
Robert Popper endorses throwing beans on your last day at work.
I do.
That's it.
That's right, Si.
Yeah. Simon to you.
Thank you.
You can see Chortle's headline now.
Yeah, the headline. Which one?
What?
Vanessa Feltz or Si?
So, Si and Rob endorse.
Si and Rob endorse children burning.
Yeah. Oh, well. It depends on, yeah, we'll get into that another time. And then you moved on to the 11 o'clock, or you had an appearance on the 11 o'clock show.
Oh, just in that occasionally, yeah. As a character called Simon Michael Simon, who spoke a bit like Robin Cooper does, but he was a bit like this. And God, what was it? I used to go out with my mouth, go up to, like, I was an autograph hunter, and I'd have like an autograph book, and I would go up to like the Houses of Parliament, and... What it was, I remember, I used to say to camera, this week I've been asked to go and get the autograph of MP Martin Bell, whatever. I hope I'm not thick. That was my thing, I was hoping I'm not sick. Then I would go up to them with an autograph book, find them outside the House of Parliament, but with my mouth full of, like, chicken and mushroom soup, stand there like a weirdo. They look at me and go, and they'd sign it. And then I vomit all over the floor in front of them. And go, I'm so sorry, I've been thick everywhere, and they wouldn't really know how to react. And I would say... Please don't tell Mr. Me. I said, please don't tell Mr. Lorimer. He'll be livid. That was it every week. And they would go, who's Mr. Lorimer? Are you okay? And that's what I did. But I did do Gorbachev. I vomited in front of Gorbachev. And afterwards, I said, I can't believe I've just been sick in front of the second most important man in the world in the 80s.
That's a claim.
That was good.
And how did that even come about? Like, cause
I don't know, because it's the only thing, I only did it like 6-7 times. They asked if I wanted to do something, and I thought of someone that's being sick. Like, you couldn't be sick on them, but like,
right,
it would be weird, you know. My mum was so proud.
But that's becoming my tagline for life. My dad's proud. It's all
like, a social worker.
I think as a millennial, most of my decisions are trying to make my parents proud. But also
give up
as a millennial,
on that.
Yeah, I've given up on it.
Give up on it.
No,
you'll never make them proud.
No, I did once.
No, you won't ever make them proud.
Oh,
I'm
no,
not general. I'm just.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's just. Have they sent you in for this? Have they like called you up?
Yes, they have.
Meeting and gone, just let them know.
Anna and Tony.
We've just like, what, yeah, that's their name.
Right.
That's
what are their names?
No, it's Raymond and Sandra, but
Raymond and Sandra,
close
nice.
Enough, close enough.
Very good.
You can use it for a callback.
Good
later.
Parent names.
They are good parent names, but yeah.
What are their best friends? Have they got good parent names of best friend names?
My dad doesn't have any friends, really.
No, I've got a whole episode of Friday Night Dinner about.
Oh, have you really?
Yeah.
Okay,
is that dads don't have friends. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Well, no. I think my dad has co-workers that he calls friends, which
but
I find
not
inherently
friends.
Funny. Because they don't hang around with him unless they're employed too.
Right.
Which I find really, like, depressing but funny. My mum's best friend... Well, actually, no. My mum's best friend is a girl called Sharon. Or guy. And her husband is called Darren. And it happens to be someone...
My middle name, Darren.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Coincidence?
It's a terrible name.
All right, well, I'll tell him you said... Actually, no, his name's Darren Starr. So that is a solid name.
Darren?
Starr.
That is a good name.
That's a solid name. That's his real name as well.
That's
he hasn't changed it.
So, 2 R's or 1 R?
Oh, 2 R's.
Very nice.
I know. He's very, very bling. He's not. He's the complete opposite of his name. But I was going to ask, because the next job I've got written down here for you was commissioning editor for Entertainment Channel 4.
Well, I was. I worked at Granada for a couple of years. I mainly used their facilities to write my books, The Time Waster Letters.
Okay.
Which was brilliant and wonderful facilities. But I did work as a commissioner for, yeah, I commissioned comedy for a couple of years, like 2.5, 3 years at Channel 4, yeah.
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 And back, was that just like you applied and you moved across?
No, I got asked to come in.
Oh, really?
And, yeah. And I did it. It was fun. It was good fun, actually. It was all right. Channel 4 was good.
Yeah,
I liked it. I mean, by the third year, I wanted to leave. But it was really good. Yeah, really, it was really creative place, and it was good. Like, I worked with good people, like Caroline Leddy, who I mentioned, who execs my show, and she's did worked with Chris Morris and did Green Wing, and I mean, she's amazing. And Ian Morris, who co-writes In Between Us, and we were like a nice little team. We got on really well, and it was quite creative. You were quite creatively involved in stuff, and just you got to see all the new people coming through. It was good. I really enjoyed it, actually.
When roughly how old were you at this point?
About 32 or something like that.
So how long, when was it, like, year was this?
This was in about 2001 to 2000 to 2003.
So this was when there was still, there were five terrestrial channels, and there wasn't that much Sky, if I remember, by
probably
that point.
Probably not, yeah, I don't remember, yeah.
And there was definitely no on-demand players or anything.
No, wasn't. Everything was done by fax.
No, I'm just trying to remember what it was like. Cause
yeah, and then they had running water, but only between the hours.
Yeah. And an outdoor toilet.
Yeah. But we hadn't, pasta hadn't arrived in Britain. Yeah. It was that time.
Yeah. Because you commissioned, I've got written down here, Bow Selector, Black Books.
No, I didn't. I commissioned series.
Is your IMDb completely wrong? Is
that... I don't do it. Two and three of Black Books, and series two of
Spaced.
And then, I did Comedy Labs and stuff. Yeah.
So when I spoke to, I was talking to you about Graham Smith before this, because I remember he commissioned, or he had a hand in commissioning Space as well. And
I didn't commission it originally at all. So that was all. I thought it was all. What's her name? Who did it? Cheryl Taylor.
Right.
Who was there? I think she commissioned that. Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask that when I so actually this is a slightly convoluted way of asking this, but I spoke to Ian Coyle, the guy at Dave TV, and he was saying that most channels have, or every channel has a tone of voice you have to adjust to in order to make it work on a channel. And I was wondering, when you got the scripts, for example, Bow Selector, because they're very different shows, Bow Selector, Black Books and Space, just taking those three as an example, did you, how much changes did you have
like
to...
Space was just like, it was just ready to go. Space Series 2, here it is, it's brilliant, fine. Right. Black Books was, I would look at the scripts, but I mean, they were so brilliant and they knew what they were doing. That wasn't... You'd go along to the edits and see them give notes and, if they can make it better, fantastic. But I said, so I was really involved with it because... I knew Lee Francis beforehand, and he used to, like, when I used to work at Granada, he used to turn up in character and get thrown out by the security guards. He used to come as this character called Barry Gibson with his big teeth. I've still got it somewhere. He came along, and then he texted me or called me off. I've been thrown out because he came along. He stays in character the whole time. He's this nutcase. To deliver me a box full of weird, like, it might have been a tin of Spam or something stupid. But he got thrown out, and it was before you were using your mobile phone to take photos and stuff. He took a Polaroid of the security guard throwing him out, stuck it on the box, and gave it to them to deliver. So I got this box. Nice. So we threw him out, but he wanted you to... And in it was the Polaroid of the security guard throwing him out. So, yeah, but I was... He was like... He used to just make me laugh, and I just thought he'd be funny and something. And then when he started doing his masks, and then we helped put him with the right people, and then... They made like a big show. I thought, you either loved that show or hated that show, I think. But I really love that show. I think he's really funny.
Were there any shows that came to you when you were Channel 4 that you had to turn down, even though they were good shows, they just wouldn't work on Channel 4?
Oh, I see. Probably were, yeah. I can't remember like what ones. Maybe, yeah. And often, though, you didn't really sort of care. You go, well, we wouldn't have done them anyway. But I can't remember, really, yeah. I mean, we've got lots of terrible ones. But I did have a Nutter file that I kept because of all the... Like, people would send you, like, amazingly bad... People would give me the bad... Because I like keeping the... I mean, we got one that was covered in swastikas. It was a bit strange.
Really?
That was weird. One...
Is that how Friday Night Dinner came out?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I sent it to myself. And then there was one... There's one that me and Ian Morris couldn't... We used to read so much. We couldn't work it. It just seemed to be... It was a program I did, but it just seemed to be about him and his father making a model tank, but a small tank.
Right.
Like a bonding experience, and that was it. But it was mainly the instructions on how to make the tank. But it was only like a sort of 10-inch big tank, and it had diagrams of how to make the tank with it. And we thought that was probably the best proposal we'd ever seen.
Have you thought about a sitcom in an office of a commissioner who gets shit ideas but still tries to pitch them? Because that sounds amazing as a meta, like, because you've already got
all
the scripts.
It'll probably just be watched by you and me. That
yeah,
be.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I'd watch it thousands of times.
Well, I wanted to get. What I wanted to do was get like one of the terrible scripts, the really bad scripts, and make them, but make it really well.
Yeah.
So really good actors, not hamming it up, doing the lines as well as they can. Mm. So it's all really well made, but it's just a script that lets the whole thing down. I think that'd be fantastic.
Mm. Yeah, I think that'd be.
But no one would let you do that.
You could do it if you... So, like, do you remember when there was the writer's strike in America and
yeah.
they did the Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog?
No.
You don't remember?
No, I don't. I was out there at the time, though. I remember them.
Dr. Horrible, if you haven't seen Dr. Horrible, it's outstanding. It's got people like Neil Patrick Harris in it.
Okay.
And they all got together and wrote this script and made it on a very nominal budget just to prove that, you know, I can't remember what...
What, a bad script?
No, it was an amazing script. It's absolutely outstanding.
Oh, right.
It was a three-part musical sitcom about an evil villain... Who's shit at it, but wants to join the evil league of evil, and yeah, if you've not seen it, it's,
no, I haven't seen it.
I'll send you a link. It's
yeah,
absolutely.
No, I'd like to see
that. It's like 10 minutes of. Well, now I'm pitching the show that's already existing.
I love it. I'll buy it.
But it's one. But it's one of those things where they made it on such a small budget. They made it on such a tight deadline, and you know they wanted to get out before the start. Was you know because they wanted to prove
that
it could be done on a very small scale. That it was yeah.
That sounds good.
It's one of those nuggets of things. But yeah, all right, that's that relevant. The question's not relevant then.
It's all relevant in some way.
Probably.
It's life.
So did you? Because you now make shows, and a lot of them go on Channel 4.
Hmm.
Do you think being a commissioning editor for Channel 4 helped you learn that style guide and how it works?
Maybe I was kind of like I went to Channel 4, I felt, I like the vibe in this place. So it felt sort of... What I liked when I went there was, at the time, and whether it's changed or not, was like, they wanted to be different. And they were more experimental or just different. They wanted to be different. And I like that sort of vibe. So maybe my stuff, to me, feels more geared that type of thing, where you can take a few more chances and get away with language more, maybe if you want to, and just stuff that... You're allowed to do more, I think, on that channel than kind of any other channel, really. I kind of like that.
Okay. So, how much have you worked... Because the question I'm going to ask, so I might
go on,
edit
you
this bit out.
Get ready.
Well, no, I might edit this bit out because it might sound weird. But, because my question was going to be, which channel/brands do you think are doing the most for stand-up on TV at the moment?
Stand-up?
Yeah, or stand-up or comedy. Because...
No, well, Channel 4's pretty good at the moment. They've got some good shows. They've got... My show, whether you like them or not. Friday, they've got, what have they got? You've got Friday Night Dinner, you've got The Windsors, which I didn't think I'd like, and I thought was so really funny. I thought it was hilarious, actually. You've got, what else have we got on Channel 4? We've got Raised by Wolves, which is great.
Mm.
You've got, what other things? They've got the Sharon Horgan thing.
Mm.
That's great. Catastrophe. What else have they got? They've got some really good things.
What, do you think they're becoming the place that you... would want, like, if you were starting now, would they be the place that you would immediately think of to send your scripts off?
I mean, BBC, you can get a nice show on BBC. I mean, they've got Mum at the moment, that's fantastic. I love that show. So, no, I think Channel 4 at the moment, they do less comedies, but I think most of them are pretty good.
Right.
Generally, they're really, like, good quality shows. Well, obviously, I don't like cutbacks on comedy, because I'm on lots of comedy. So, no, I think it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
I think comedies, like, we make... good comedies, and I think there's like loads of great stuff at the moment. I mean, there's loads of places to do stuff now, and you are seeing good comedies on quite a lot of channels now. So it's, I don't know if it's golden age or whatever here, but there's a lot of great stuff.
Well, Dave said, Ian at Dave said that the more channels there are, actually, the less opportunities there are because of the spread of budget and the way the channels are laid out.
There seems to be lots of shows now. There seems to be quite a lot of good shows. Like,
are you finding there's more opportunity for you?
Well, I'm not pitching here and now. I'm just getting on with my stuff, so I haven't. But I'm thinking there's Sky do some really good shows. There's BBC, there's Channel 4. There's quite a lot of places now, you know, where you can sell things. Yeah. Seems to be like quite a lot of good shows on. It used to be, you know, that couple of shows are good. Now there'll be like, there's five really good shows.
And it's
Julia Davis's show, Hunderby's on here, and blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
There's some good stuff.
And online, particularly, you can... There's bountiful amounts of stuff on, like, YouTube and podcasts.
On what?
YouTube.
I don't know that.
You don't know YouTube?
Okay. What's that?
Do you know Google?
Google.
Okay,
my mum didn't know what YouTube was until about 2 weeks ago.
I was going to try and do an impression of your nan then, trying to say zig and zag by going Google, but it didn't quite work.
Google. That's not bad.
Almost.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It's all right. If you close your eyes, you can just imagine that, you know. Yes. I don't know why you would want to do that.
No, well, yeah.
Please open your eyes.
No, never.
For the rest of the interview. No, I mean, because Popper Productions, we're jumping back and forth, but it doesn't matter.
Popper Pictures, sorry.
Is it Popper Pictures or Popper
Productions? It's Popper Pictures.
Oh, sorry, my bad.
Couldn't think of a name, and then my accountant said to me, "Why don't you just call it Popper Pictures?" Like, okay.
Yeah, you are, as you say, you are Popper Pictures.
I am, and my team.
Yeah. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
So I was intrigued because on your website it says you make, you're set up to make great content for the TV and for the internet.
Mm.
And I'm wondering if you still, maybe it's just from when you set it up, or maybe now, do you still see them as separate entities?
Not really anymore, no. I think having a good web series would be good, you know. But I mean, I've mainly been concentrating on writing and making Friday Night Dinner, so I haven't been developing loads of shows with lots of other people at the moment, which is, I'll probably start doing again soonish type thing. But yeah, I've mainly just been kind of writing and sort of enjoying just making stuff.
When you started out versus now, I don't know how much of a perspective you'll have on it now, because obviously you're so established that...
Oh, so established.
Would you not say you're established?
Yeah, I suppose. Well, I've made a few things, so... Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I guess it's a bit easier. Although, like, say, to get Friday Night Dinner off on the air, that took a long time. You know, it was... From like commissioning a script, it was like 2.5 years before it was on TV. It was a long. You always have to jump through a lot of hoops.
So is that the first series?
Yeah, to get it on. It still takes a lot, and I've done a lot before. It does get a bit easier, but it's still not easy.
Okay.
You can't just go, right, I'm going to do this, and it's on. You know, it's still pretty tough.
Okay, let's jump to that bit then. So when did you have the idea for Friday Night?
I had it in the bath.
Okay.
And I did, yeah.
Weirdly, I really wish you'd open your eyes now.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm putting my eyes. I told you, and I'm going to stay in this bath. I have some water with me in there.
Yeah.
I'll just use the bath water.
Yeah.
You can add that on afterwards. and then cut that bit out.
Yeah.
No one will know because it's cut.
All right. But, you're not directing my podcast.
Yeah, I am. I am. So yeah, I did. I tell you, when I was at Channel 4, Caroline Leddy, who used to run Channel 4 Comedy, used to, and I left, and she said to me, "Oh, I used to love your stories you say about your funny grandma, your friends, your family, the stuff you used to," because I always thought there was a funny way of that my sort of buddies and my gran and my mum and dad and my brother spoke and acted, and it was so specific, and I don't know, just, but I didn't. I always wanted to write something in that vernacular, but I couldn't think of what it was. And then years later, I suddenly just had the idea. Friday Night Dinner. I thought, oh, that's a good title. Kind of says what it is, and you can have two boys. It's kind of about reverting. I just noticed when you go home to your parents when you're younger or whatever, you just kind of become kids again, and everyone does that. I hadn't seen that on TV. And also dads go a bit mental and they don't have friends anymore, and they're like a little island in the family, and it was that. And I thought, well, I could do this in a thing, you know, they come home, it always starts the same way, and we can like look at all those themes within it, blah blah blah. And I thought, oh, there's a show there. I suddenly thought, and I sort of pitched that to Caroline Leddy, who was head of Channel 4.
Was that like an official pitch, or was that just
no?
A
I phoned her actually, because she said, like, you know, if you've got any ideas at some point, and I said, I think I've got the idea, and I think because you said, if I've got a good idea one day, hopefully you'll commission the script. I said, I bet you'll commission the script if I tell you the title, three words, and I did. And she said, no, I'll commission that. So, but then it took me. I wrote another one, and then commissioners changed, and the head of the Channel 4 changes, and there's another one comes in, and they're not sure, it's not their thing, and it's like, it takes, you know, years, and then it took 2-3 years before it was on TV, yeah. At least, yeah. So it's a long time.
In that you said, like, so if a commissioner changes, and it might not be to their taste and stuff, do you think it's, I don't want to say odd, but do you think it is...
I'm going to pour some water, but carry on, it will sound
good. Go ahead. Do you think it's a problem, necessarily, that... what gets shown on TV is kind of that's the bath. It's just
yep,
the bath. This is going to be a bitch to edit.
it'll sound good.
It'll sound all right. he's now just like opening bottles and
yep,
things, like getting more effective.
Chaos.
It's all right. I lost my train of thought. Oh yeah. So if do you think it's a not a, I don't want to say problem, but for want of a better term, a problem that what we see on TV is basically controlled then by a dozen or so commissioners who, and a lot of it is their own taste.
Well, someone's got to make a decision, you know, and someone's got to have taste.
But do you know,
when I was at Channel 4, we were all quite opinionated, and we would make decisions. I think, you know, you'd have to go to your head of the top department, but it was at least I thought what was good then. I don't know if there's so much now. Maybe there's some are. To have sort of people that have got, at least they've got an opinion and a taste, as opposed to someone who's quite bland and goes, well, I don't know, let me see what my superior thinks. I don't have an opinion. I'd much prefer to see someone and they go, I hate that idea. We're not doing it, and be told straight away, rather than, well, maybe, I'm not sure, and then wait months. I think it's good if someone's got clear, like Phil Clark at Channel 4's got a great taste, I think. Shane Allen at BBC's got great taste, and they're kind of opinionated and they like comedy. Mm. I think that's great.
Are there any channels, I don't know, because I know Shane, I know Phil, and I can't say that yet because we're sorting out dates, but are there any channels that work on like a board of people rather than an individual that you know of?
Well, I think like when you're a commissioner, you can't just go, right, I'm commissioning that, it's done. You have to go.
Yeah.
So Phil will have to go to the head of Channel 4, I want to commission this, what do you think? And they might say, no, okay, annoying or whatever, but they have their own things to take into account, so. Mm. I'm sure, I don't know all the channels. I know some commissioners are great, some are like, oh, I'm not sure I want to see them, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when I spoke to Ian at Dave, he said that his job is not really a commissioner, it's more of an ad man, because a lot of the time something great will come his way, but he knows that the adverts won't sell on it, so he can't commission it.
Yeah, well, don't know what to say about that, yeah.
Do you think, I mean, because you were a commissioner.
I never had anything like that at Channel 4.
Really?
Ads. Okay. It was never mentioned, no. I don't think it's ever mentioned about ads.
So what would have been the...
Just something really funny and new and interesting, I think. Something different. And it's like balance, so they've got a balance lot. Well, we've got a show like that, we won't do it,
right?
Obviously. So, like it, so... It doesn't have to be a wacky, zany, hate those words, but I'm using them on purpose, like... premise, it could be like my thing is about a family, but hopefully it's got a voice that's distinct, you know, a distinct voice.
Yeah,
that's what you're looking for, I think. So like Raised by Wolves is only like Kathleen Moran and her sister could do that. So I think that's kind of what you're looking for. Someone, oh, where are they from, what's that, that's a good voice, they're interesting.
So when you view a script, or when you were viewing scripts, were you reading it for...
I've got my eyes closed still, but if I had a script...
were you looking at it for a writer, or were you looking at it for the idea? Because if you were looking at it for a writer, I presume you would keep people on file, as it were, and if a project came along, you'd be like, oh, we'd love it if you came in and helped out with this, or we'd love it if you script edited this, or you're only looking for the idea of the show.
What do you mean, when I was at Channel 4?
When you were at Channel 4.
Well, yeah, a lot of people think that commissioners spend a lot of time just getting millions of scripts in from like the general public and stuff, which you do get some, but often you don't. They're not the ones to read, because you want someone who's probably got an agent. Or we did comedy labs at the time where anyone could apply and you would get new people. That was great. Other than that, it's companies coming to you, like pitching things, or writers coming to you with ideas. Or someone's got an idea and you're putting them with a producer and blah, blah, blah. But you're looking for like a good writer. Sometimes it's a great script, great writer. Oh, the writing's brilliant. We would never make this show. It just wouldn't make this show. But who's this person? You might come in if you've got any other ideas and develop a thing with them, or put them with a production company and, oh, you be good with that person. See what you can come up and come back in a few months, blah, blah, blah. That's what you kind of did, a lot of that. Putting people with people was good.
What opportunities do you think there are now, or what opportunities do you know of now? That, what?
None. Sorry.
Okay. No. you hear that? Just stop listening now. No, for like new writers who maybe want to get something on TV, I mean, what are your opinions on, for example, building an audience using social media, or putting your work out there and then sending it off to a department?
Yeah, putting your work out there is great. Yeah, I mean, when we did Look Around, me and Peter, we made it as a short film just for fun. We didn't think we'll do a TV series. And then we just used to give VHSs to people,
right,
just to spread the word, and we did a big screening. That's how we did it, because just to show them. And then people came out and said, why don't you do a TV show? We hadn't really thought of it. We still like people that make stuff because they want to make stuff and they're good, it's great. You know, they'll get noticed if they're great and they're just making, who are they, they just do this thing, it's funny. Someone will call them in, you know. That's what I used to do. Yeah
I mean, I say this to people a lot, but it's great to hear it from someone further down the chain, or higher up the chain, but further down the line than me.
Or higher up the chain and further down, or further up the chain.
The chain and down.
Both, yeah.
more experienced. We'll say it like that way.
Sitting opposite you.
Yeah, sitting opposite. Someone who's sitting opposite.
Anyone
me.
Sitting opposite.
That's all I want from an interviewee.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
No, like, because a lot of people say, oh, you know, how'd you start making videos, how'd you start making podcasts, all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, just make it. And yeah. Then they're like, but how'd you find time? What's the point in doing it? And I'm like, because I like making stuff.
Yeah.
If you don't like making it, why would you even bother starting it?
Yeah, exactly.
Because, when I started this, for example, I didn't think I'd be this the 53 is the episode that's coming out now. Yeah. But I didn't think like that.
I enjoy doing that, and I want to do. Or you feel a need to be creative,
yeah.
And so I'm going to do that.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, totally.
Yeah, and I totally get that. There are people out there I've discovered on the internet who just make stuff who I've never financially supported because I can't. There's no real way. I mean, there are ways of doing it, but I just haven't. And it's just because they're great at what they do.
Yeah.
And I now know if I want someone. So the guy I was telling you about who's going to be editing the DVD thing.
Yeah, you found them from that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I literally sent them a message on Facebook. We weren't friends. I just said, I love...
We're still not friends.
We're still not friends. We're just business acquaintances. Yeah. No, but I said, I really love how you put together these things. Do you want to talk? And
That's great.
Said, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, no, but it's just good to know. But, I mean, do you think TV then is a bit of a, not a closed door, but if a lot of people are looking for people with agents and they're not necessarily looking for unsolicited scripts, do you think there's a certain element that there is a gated community in TV rather than, I don't want to say a closed door?
Well, I think it's just that often they just don't have time to read thousands of scripts. And often most scripts are kind of terrible.
Mm.
And often you can tell by the covering letter that the scripts. In a minute, anyone used to write, I am enclosing a script for your perusal, that would be... The word perusal, I knew that I won't like the script.
Right, okay.
I don't think I've ever read a good script where the word perusal was in the letter. But, okay.
Don't use
and
the
often
perusal.
You would, yeah, don't say perusal, but it's maybe ironically. But you would often know, often the first page, you would know, you know, someone can write or they can't write, you know, and you can't write. I mean, I would try and read, if it was terrible, I'd read a few pages, but like often you're at, say, at Channel 4 and you get some scripts, you think, I know we would never make the script about. Whatever it was. So we will never do this in a million years. Mm. I don't need to read the entire script because I know I don't have time. Mm. We're not going to make it. Mm. But then sometimes you would find like people would send stuff in, you never, and they would just be brilliant. You know, very rarely you would find, I did a lot of stuff in for really new people. It was great. And they didn't know anything about TV or anyone. And you find them like someone, a producer to work with. And it was great.
How do you... Or have you ever done this? And if you haven't, how have you found other programs that have done this? How do you find programs that have gone from like YouTube, for example? By the way, YouTube's a video sharing platform.
Right,
that
platform,
that you haven't
right.
heard of.
Yeah. No, yeah. I'll check it out.
You should peruse it at some point.
I will, peruse it.
So people have got big audiences on there.
Big sometimes, oysters.
Audiences.
Oh, well, yeah,
exactly. A lot of subscribers.
Big oysters.
I'm now really worried I said oysters.
It sounds, listen back, it's a little oysterish.
Is it a little oysterish?
Good.
Okay. I'm going to talk slower.
No, it's good. No, don't. It's good.
People who've got large oysters on on the YouTubes.
Yeah.
I'm starting to sound like my mum now. she or he, have been offered TV shows and have changed what they've done and moved it onto the TV. What do you think of... Because I've had this debate a few times with different commissioners, and I am... I know you're not a commissioner now, but I've had this debate because I think the content should change if it's being shown on TV as to when it's shown on on-demand player, because it's naturally being viewed differently.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
It depends what... I mean, I don't know what things you're thinking about that have gone from YouTube to TV.
The Midnight Beast is one that jumps to mind.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so they had a YouTube series that was like sort of a consistent thing, and that got moved... I think that was Channel 4 as well.
E4,
sorry. Yeah, so, you know, what do you think of the content trying to change or transcend platforms?
Well, I think if you're doing... It depends what it is, but I think, like, if do you make it for TV, you kind of think... You just, I think, when I write anyway, I always imagine I'm watching it on television and what am I feeling
right. When
I'm watching it on TV all the time. So I always think about it on television when I'm writing it. So I guess you should think about it. If it's, you know, if it's right, if it's going to TV, how do we change it but keep the same spirit? But yeah, like when we did Look Around, we did a short film. And then when it became a TV series, how do we make this short film? You're in a cinema, you're not going to leave. It's on TV, you can turn over at any point. How do we make it clear early on what are the beats to hit so people get it and keep watching? I think that's what, I sort of imagine you kind of do, yeah.
How do you never think about the second screen experience? You know, people on their phones at the same time? Or
I don't now. Second, no. I mean,
so
what I'm going to do?
Have some enormous.
Yeah. Like, okay. Yes. I think so, yeah. I'm not, when I do Friday Night Dinner, I think. People are also tweeting at the same time. Fine. You know.
Okay. Because, I mean, you have quite a large following on Twitter, for example. Has that come about because of your credits in writing and stuff? Or do you... What would you say is your reasoning for trying to build that? Is it just to promote your own work? What's...
Pictures of cats. I don't know. I guess, yeah. Probably just stuff I've done. Yeah. And probably that, I guess.
You've not really planned, you just sort of... It's
I just
sort
went
of
on a few years ago and started putting silly things on and then tweeting my silly phone calls and things and stupid pranks and nonsense and childish things I do.
Okay.
And then, you know, you do TV shows that people kind of follow you, I guess.
Okay.
And the murders and, you know.
Yeah. I mean, but that's just standard on Twitter.
That's standard.
Standard stuff. Okay, so let's go through Friday Night Dinner then, from what you just said. So from when you had the idea to when you actually... So when you had the conception of the idea to when you actually started writing the idea or telling people about it.
Yeah.
There's a few years in there.
Yeah, just getting a script commissioned, writing it, taking quite a while and not really knowing what it is. It's all about finding your voice. So
and the characters' voices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But sort of writing... Like, I remember if I think about writing the first script, thinking I knew what it was and then realising, oh, I don't know, what is it exactly? And... things seem to be too long or not quite right, and I work very closely with Caroline Eddy, I was saying, and she would help me on that, you know, look at it and give me notes and blah blah blah. And then I said, can you commission me to do a second script, because it's alright writing one, can I do a second one, which is harder because I've done one, I've put everything into it, and then two, oh god, how do I do this? So that was trying to get that right and then going back on one to make it feel like they're sort of together, if you see what I mean, they work together.
So when you get commissioned to write a script, this is different from being commissioned to write a pilot, I presume.
Yeah, these were just scripts at first.
So do you get paid to get commissioned to write a script?
How does it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically Channel 4 have said to you at this point, we like the idea, go write a script. And is that a full episode or is that like a 10-page...
No, a full episode, write a script, yeah.
So it's not like a snipped-down version
of an episode? No, it's like a full episode, yeah.
Okay, and then you said, can you please commission me to make another one?
So they did that and they seemed to like it, and I said, like, I don't know if you're going to give me a pilot or not, but I would love to write another one because I don't know if I could write another one or not.
Right.
But I'd love to have a go. And they commissioned me to write another one.
So are you thinking of this one as episode two, or are you thinking of this
I'm
as
not
a rewrite?
Okay. I'm just thinking an episode. So I was trying not to like. So when I did the series, I try not to write. Here's an introductory episode. Right. I just plow right in because I always sort of think, well, you don't watch every episode. If you missed the first one, then you don't understand it all. I just like to go right into the thing.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So I wrote the second one, and then eventually we got a pilot. We got asked to do a taster, a 5-minute taster, which was shot in my mum and dad's house, which is hilarious because my dad kept wandering into shot. At one point he said, I'm just going out now to get some bin bags in the middle of the shot. I go, we're filming.
Right.
So that was really funny.
Did he not think at all?
Well, he's like the man in the show. He's appearing and everything.
Yeah, Mike.
So he kept wandering into the shot, which is funny to me. but not everyone. It was really funny. So we did it in my parents' house, and then from that you've got a pilot for E4. Oh, I wanted a bit on Channel 4. So we made the pilot, and then the head of Channel 4 saw it and goes, no, I think this is Channel 4, which I was really pleased about. So then we got a series for Channel 4. So it went. But you're jumping hoops the whole time. And then that ends, and you go, am I going to get a second series?
Yeah.
Am I going to get a third series? Well, am I going to get you just never know.
Yeah. So the pilot never went on E4, it just went straight to Channel 4.
Yeah, so it was shown as part of the series. So it was one of the episodes, and I think I shot another scene, and then...
And when you were... So, I mean, because I've seen all the Friday night dinner... I've seen all the Friday night supper. I've got it wrong, haven't I? It's Friday night dinner.
I'm pretending I've seen it. Okay,
so I've watched them all for this research thing, but you know what happened? It's like, as I was reading it...
No, it's funny.
I'll read it to you in a second. I've written a note, and I've read the note halfway through the...
What did the note say? Why isn't it called Friday Night Supper?
That was okay.
It would have been better if...
It would have been better if... Why was it not called Friday Night Supper?
Because it wouldn't have been good.
Okay. That's the end of the interview. No. Are you Jewish?
Yeah. Are you Jewish?
This is a long story, but...
Is this going to go in as well?
It might do. My parents are Jewish. Right. I don't believe in God. And would identify more with Buddhism, if I'm honest.
Fair dues?
Yeah. That's the shortest I've got it down to.
Very good.
After weeks of people... Because my debut show is called Buddhism and Cats.
Oh, cool.
So, but a lot of people who know me prior to starting stand-up knew I was... or identified me as Jewish.
Right.
So I had to come up with a quick way of explaining it because couldn't be asked to...
That's good.
Yeah, it's all right.
Very good. Good on you.
I like it. So when you... So, because I was only asking because there's that thing in... It's not like a law in comedy, but it's one of those unofficial rules where if you are a group, you can sort of make fun of it or have a laugh at it.
Yeah, sure.
Do you think you would have got any negative backlash if you weren't Jewish?
Yeah, I mean, it's not very Jewish. You know, a lot of people probably don't even know it's Jewish. I mean, you know, particularly. Because I tell you what, I wasn't really trying to write a Jewish comedy. It was about a Jewish family, but what I noticed was... Kind of, well, there isn't a lot about Jewish people on TV. Not that I particularly go, oh, God, that's terrible. But whenever there was, or were, it was kind of always done in a kind of schmaltzy, like, they play the violin. If they lit the Friday night Sabbath candles, they'd have, like, violin music, and it would just be... Or it would be very, what do you thought in that kind of thing, which is, like, really annoying.
And
why not just do a family, they're Jewish, and big deal. And see, it was kind of vaguely based on when I used to go home for Friday night dinner. Obviously, it's not as kind of manic as this, but a lot of it was originally kind of like that, pranking me and my brother and blah, 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 and the way we spoke a lot. And I just thought, well, it's really specific and everyone's family is very specific and I'm going to make this really, really very specific. And they speak in a certain way. They have little things they say to each other, little catchphrases, not for TV catchphrases, that you do in your, you know, with your family, you'll have little phrases that no one else will know. Like, we used to have this plastic container that was yellow, green, that we used to call, for the laundry, was known as the yellow container. Because originally it was yellow, and then it was always green for 20 years. But it's called the yellow container. Mm. Everyone has that. They don't use... So I like that. I want something very specific about a family, and that was fast and hopefully funny and had, like, plots and stuff happened and was kind of physical as well and was odd as well. So it looks kind of normal, but then you see... I like the idea that it looks, oh, what's this family thing, whatever. And then you see, like, the dad is not wearing a top. And I think you might go, oh, what's this? This is different. You know what I mean? This is odd. That's kind of what I wanted to do, really.
Were there any plot lines that you wanted to do that either your script editors or the commissioning editor at Channel 4 said, we don't like this idea or we can't go with this idea?
Well, Channel 4 are really cool. They kind of let me get on with it. And they've always been great with, like, ideas or, oh, that's good. I'm not sure that. But kind of let me get on with it, really. I let them know in the episodes I'm planning on doing one on this, one on that. With Caroline Leddy, my exec, early on, I talked her through things. And sometimes I go, I'm not sure. I've started writing this episode on this. Oh, I'm not sure if it's right. Or maybe I should do that. And will she say, oh, I'm not sure if that's right. What do you think? So it's a conversation the whole time, yeah. I have started writing a script and then dumped it, you know, halfway through, which is really painful and annoying.
Yeah, but as long as it's the best product, it doesn't... You know,
yeah, but at the time, it's like, oh, God, I've got to start again, yeah. I mean, they're hard because they're just quite hard to do like writing is on your own, and I mean, there are worse jobs, but it's just brain thinking, sitting right. Got to think of a new thing that happens basically in a house, you know, and I've got to fill 50, my pages, my scripts are long because everyone speaks fast, so they're like 50 pages, they're quite long. And I've got to think of things that happen, like, oh, I've done that one before, I can't do that. I've done that one before. It gets sort of harder and harder, really. But, so, you know, at the end of, like, 5-6 weeks.
So you write the whole script, and it takes you about 5 or 6 weeks to produce a script. Yeah. How long does it take to film an episode?
Well, we do prep. So 6 weeks prep, preparing with, like, the team that gradually join for 6 weeks. And then when you do everything, costume, makeup, casting, blah blah blah, locations, and planning the whole thing, and then I'm rehearsing. You do a big read through of all your scripts with everyone there, which is great. And then you film. We film 7 weeks. It takes to do a 6-part, so it's about 6 days an episode. So I think it's like 37 days. I think we were filming something like that.
Okay, and like you took over a house for that kind.
We do film in an actual house. Yeah, yeah, oh, that's amazing. Same house. Every time. Yeah.
So you didn't have to necessarily make a...
We use an actual house. The person moves out. We redecorate the house.
Really?
They move out. Yeah, we're really lucky. She's like lovely, the owner. She moves out. We take over the house. We film there. And then we do like a week location stuff, other stuff, outdoor stuff. And then we film in the house, the rest of it.
Is it more or less expensive to rent a house than to build a set
house? I
think
it might be more expensive to build. It might work out cheaper eventually. I don't know. Right. We haven't done that.
Okay.
We've had the house and we've just been in the house. And you sort of go stir crazy. There's like 50 crew members in a house.
Yeah, because I'm just picturing that. And it's not a big house from what you can see.
It's not small. It's like quite a nice size. But when you've got 50 people, basically wherever you sit, in 2 seconds someone will say, excuse me, and they'll carry a light through. Or you sit here, oh, I'm putting a light here.
Yeah.
Or sit here, the camera's going here. You just think you've found... Because most of filming is waiting for lighting and this and moving stuff. So there's a lot of downtime, and you think, oh, I'm going to sit here and read the paper, and then someone sits, they move where you're sitting. So you just, it's really important that you get on with everyone. Like luckily I've had really good crews, because you sort of go mental by the end.
Yeah. So in terms of, like, budgeting a series of shows like that, does it work, is it like Channel 4 says, here's your budget, you work out how much.
Yeah,
you're
I mean, I don't
show.
Get too involved in the, but I know I'll know if it's like, oh, we need to save some money now.
Right.
How are we going to do it? Or, you know, so when you've written the scripts, you'll talk with your line producer who will do the money, and you'll go through, and your first AD who prepares it and goes to you, it's too long. We need 2 more days to film. We're going to have to cut some stuff. Mm. So I'll say, okay, well, what are the problematic scenes? Do they need to walk from this room here all the way to there? Can we do a cut when they're up there? Because filming moving up the stairs is going to take too long at this day.
Right.
Yes, we could do that. I'll rewrite that. Can we, instead of having 3 cars, have 2 cars? No, I need 3 cars, but I'll lose a car here. So you do that as well. So you have discussions about, I'll change. So I always end up cutting or changing like 10 or 12 scenes. Or making it easier, because I think, well, we're not going to achieve it, so I'm going to cut this right down by 2 pages, or I'll set this here. It's easier. It's fine. It won't really damage it. It'll be fine. I'll just set it here.
Mm.
I'll rewrite this. The ending's too ambitious. I'll change it. So you do a lot of that during production, pre-production. There'll be some of that rewriting stuff to save money and make it like filmable.
Right.
And then occasionally while you're on set, generally it doesn't happen, but there might be like, we are not going to finish today. This scene... What are we going to do? We're not going, and you have to finish. You know, because otherwise you have to catch it the next day or next day. And so, you know, what are we going to do? And sometimes you have to go, right, I'm going to rewrite it, and I'm going to do this 2-page dialogue. I'm going to do it with like 2 lines, like a joke here and an image, and we can do it. You know, that's really annoying because you really have to think fast, and there's nowhere to do it quietly. You just have to just sit and just desperately rewrite. Which I hate doing. It happens sometimes, you know. And then sometimes it kind of works better. In the end, it's better anyway.
Yeah, definitely. In my head, and it's only in my head, so this might be
only
wrong.
Your head.
Only in my head. It must get less expensive to produce a show as time goes on, because in the first series, you've got to find the right crew, find the right cast, find
the right locations.
Yeah,
I think it gets sort of more expensive.
Oh, really?
I think it doesn't get particularly cheaper. You know, people's rates often go up and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah, I suppose, because they're the only ones that can do the part and stuff.
Yeah, so it doesn't get necessarily cheaper.
But, I mean, if you discounted rates of actors, would the actual I mean, how much was your budget for the production for the first series? For
I couldn't look. To
say. Oh, you can't say. Okay.
Yes.
I'm just wondering, like, how much it would be going up by, and like, not as in specific. Who got paid this? But I'm wondering, like, how they work out whether the amount.
I think that's like a discussion with Channel 4 and like the production company will.
Okay.
Say we need this much because blah blah blah. We're being more ambitious. Sometimes like they're more ambitious. We go out more. Mm. We're doing this, so that needs to be factored in. You know,
yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. But it gets more expensive as it goes on.
I think a bit more expensive. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's yeah.
I suppose
£80 million an episode.
Well, I suppose like you said, the actors cost more because they're the only ones that can do it. So like with Friends, by the end they were like £1 million an episode or something ridiculous. And like with you,
I'm £1 million an episode.
Yeah. Well, you heard it here first.
You heard it here first.
No, because I can imagine, like you said, it's hard to come up with new ideas, and so it takes more time for you to write a script than it would.
It sort of takes me the same amount of time. Oh, okay. It's kind of 5 weeks, 5-6 weeks, like 7 months to write it.
Right.
I think if I've got 7 months to do it, I've got like a month of piddling around thinking of ideas, and then kind of a month, 5 weeks an episode, I will do it.
So in terms of time between you working on a show, so what was the show you worked on before Friday Night?
Well, I was doing Friday Night Dinner for like, I've done it now for 4 years. Yeah. 5 years probably now. So yeah. I've done 4 series. So yeah, I've done it. I've sort of constantly been doing this.
So I'm wondering, when you have gaps between shows.
Yeah.
What is
so actually... I might be script editing other things, writing some other things. I did a script for HBO, Peter Serafinowicz, and I tried to adapt Friday Night Dinner to for America. It failed. And so, yeah, other stuff. I've got other stuff, you know, I do bits and bobs and other things.
I was going to ask you about that, because American remakes in general, especially with quite British... I mean, I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but I think Friday Night is quite a British way of...
How dare you?
How dare you, guys?
They were going to make a German one, actually.
Oh, were they?
The first year with the Germans, it was great, and they were really nice, and they wrote the script, like, adapted from what I mean in German. And I speak German, but I couldn't understand the script. I mean, right. I can get by in it,
yeah.
But my friend...
I'm imagining the script isn't as punchy in German, knowing the language.
It's quite long.
Yeah.
But Ingrid Oliver, she's a comedy actress from Watson and Oliver, who I know, she's German. Mm. So I said, do you mind reading the script and tell me if this is any good? And she said, it was really great. She said, they really... I met the guys, they seem really funny. And she said, it was really good. And in the end, like, it looked like it was going to happen in Germany. I just thought, fantastic, the first remake is German. And then it didn't in the end. I was like gutted. Oh, that would be so funny watching it in German.
Yeah, I didn't even hear about the German remake.
Well, no, you wouldn't have. It was just discussions with us and they were going to do it and then it didn't happen. But yeah, I've got a German script at home somewhere.
Why didn't it happen then?
Obviously the broadcasters finally said, no, whatever.
Okay.
Nine.
That's the only German I know. Oh, Guten Tag.
Guten Tag, yeah. Dankeschön.
Yeah, Dankeschön.
Dankeschön. Bitteschön.
I know Mein Führer, that's it. Those very are nice, all the German
well, that's
I know.
Very important.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got all the main...
The main
phrases.
Ones, Mein Führer. Yeah, Mein Führer. Yeah.
Well, no, because like, I was going to say, so traditionally, remakes of English shows to American audiences don't necessarily go down well, and if they do, they've had to make a lot of concessions to make it more colloquial.
Sure.
So...
Yeah, I mean, you would have to make it American. You can't just do your British thing. You know, we speak differently.
I think they did it with The Inbetweeners, and it got... massively like trounced on by the British, by the quite hard.
I never saw the American one.
Did you not?
No.
Okay. I saw the trailer, and I remember watching it thinking, "This is so bad." Like, I just, I'm sorry if you had anything to do with it.
I had nothing to do with it at all. I never saw it.
Okay.
Maybe I saw the trailer and I didn't. Yeah, but then they would. You would go, "Oh, I love this show. It's British. Why are they doing it?" Of course, most people do, don't they?
Well, the worst part is the worst part for me was
because it's different, and it's suddenly like they're talking a different way and.
It looked like they'd used almost the same script, but they just changed the actors. Hmm. And I was
they would, because it's...
But it just felt...
Yeah, not right.
Yeah, but I suppose that's the thing, wasn't it? Wasn't it Monica... Sorry, back to Friends. Monica was originally going to be cast as Rachel.
Right.
And how would that have looked if, you know, they'd carried out? So maybe if they'd
done it... A different world we live in now.
I know, right? Yeah. You know.
If only that scenario had happened.
Well, I mean, everything is the butterfly effect.
Exactly, the butterfly effect.
Yeah. Okay, so, I mean, but you were for the remake if they did it?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Okay.
Because why wouldn't you be?
No, I mean,
if it does well, but you make lots of money.
Well, no, but I'm saying...
I'm not meaning it like that, but if you can get a good show on America and people are watching it...
Yeah.
I mean, think of Ricky Gervais. He did The Office. It was incredible.
Yeah.
They took it over there and he's done, you know, it's quite a nice thing, and people like the show. If you don't want it to be a crap show on America,
no.
But if it's a great show and it's they're making it over there and they're making 100 episodes, that's, you know, like, why not? That's great, isn't it?
Yeah, no, but as a creative person, I imagine if you've... I know you plan it for TV and you think about it when you're writing it for sure. TV. I assume the audience you'd be thinking about would be British.
Sure, I mean, that. You want someone, either do it yourself, you can, or someone great, a great pair of hands who knows how to make shows, to translate your show into, well, I know how it will work here.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be lucky. Yeah, I'd love it if there was a great version of that there that wasn't something I was ashamed of. You know, I wouldn't really be happy. Oh, I made lots of money from this. It's shit. It'll be, oh, it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
It would be nice if it was a good show. Yeah, of course. I'd love that. Yeah, I'd love that. I like the German one. I'd like to see the German one make me, though. That would be much better.
You can make it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it called? They had different. The dog wasn't called Wilson. It was called something else. It was like, there was a reason why.
Oh, okay.
It was funny.
Okay.
Yeah, it's funny. Wilson wouldn't be like,
that's not a German name.
No, and it was the equivalent that Wilson would be. I can't remember what it was. Gunter or something. Probably Gunter. Not.
Gunter's a cute name. Would it be a
I don't think it was
breed?
Gunter. It was going to be a slightly different breed as well, because our breed wasn't as funny. There's a certain type of German dog that would be funnier.
That's
there.
Funny.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And Dad collected football cards, you know, stickers or something.
Right.
That was a thing there that would translate well as a trope there more than here. There's a few little things that were different. It was like, oh, okay.
I have a friend of mine who did a show in Amsterdam, and the first show he did, the joke that had a reference to, I think it was Asda or something, died. And then the next show, he realised, oh, shit, they don't have Asda here, because he's not seen one in fucking ages. Yeah. So he asked the guy at the booth, do you know what Asda is? And they Googled it, and he showed him, and he went, what's the equivalent to Asda? And he told him. And, in the end, they were like, it just worked. Like, it was fine. And it was one of those weird...
Hüttenwahn?
I don't know. Right. I never saw him in Amsterdam. But it was just a really interesting chat where he was like, I didn't even think of that when I came out here.
Yeah.
Because they booked me on the show. So I assumed they knew the show.
It's very British references.
Yeah, exactly. Funny. Yeah, exactly. So the community of Friday night supper...
Dinner.
I know, I'm going to call it that just to annoy you now.
Thursday afternoon brunch.
I was using it ironically to see if you pick up on it again.
I didn't know it was ironic, but I thought you'd actually forgotten, but it's
good. No, I'll start calling you by his actual name if you want, I'm calling it the wrong name.
FND.
FND. FND, Friday Night Supper.
It gets shortened in emails.
Okay, so FND, Friday Night Supper.
FNS.
No, that would be Friday Night Dinner. But there's a lot of sort of catchphrase in that, like there is in the in-betweeners, like you said. And there's a lot of people, I mean, I see it on Twitter a lot when it trends and stuff, that people are sort of tweeting silly things people are saying.
Sure.
And that kind of thing. Do you ever, I mean, I know, for example, with the League of Gentlemen guys, who have a lot of sort of cult followings around their shows and sort of try to build communities around them. Have you ever thought about trying to maybe start like a group because they have Twitter feeds sometimes for shows now and things like that. Have you ever thought about trying to engage more?
I go on Twitter and stuff like that, but I haven't particularly thought of running a Friday night dinner Twitter feed.
Okay.
No, but no, and also like it's weird looking at Twitter when your show's on.
Yeah.
Particularly when it's new, because normally most people don't like new comedies much, or you'll get most good things and you'll get a few that don't like it, and then gradually when people watch the second week they go, this is so much better than the first week. And it's generally, I remember like my second show wasn't particularly better than the first one, but you just know who the people are, because it's always strange, you know, the first time you watch something, even if it's really good, it's like, oh yeah, this is good, I think I get this, and they go, oh, I get it, right, he's always like that, she's like this.
I used to work for the Discovery Channel, live tweeting for them, and I remember having a really big row with the guy from Discovery Channel and my boss then, because they were convinced that we needed to get this episode of a certain TV show trending in the first episode, and I was like, but you've spent millions on this show and you don't want them to look at it. Like, there's no reason for it. And I ended up leaving after about 2 months because I was getting so frustrated with the fact they wanted me to reply to people during the show. And then as the show finished, my shift was over, so I wouldn't have to reply to people. And then next morning I'd get in and reply to them. But I was like, why am I doing this? Like, you're making me actively make people avoid your show.
Totally.
You're employing me to do that.
Totally.
Yeah. But there are fees for that. I mean, especially a lot of HBO shows.
What was the show?
I will tell you after.
Okay.
Yeah. It was not a comedy.
Shock mystery.
Yeah, let's call it that. It was not a comedy show, let's put it that way. Which was annoying because...
But that could be anything. I mean, that doesn't give me a clue. Put it that way.
It could be anything that you've not worked on.
Anything.
Yeah. I'll tell you after.
Lincoln Tonight, the local news show.
Yes. That
classic.
That classic Twitter long show.
Yep.
That we're all interested in. Okay, so In terms of, I mean, like you said, social media. So, yeah, so, because, like you said, social media is becoming more and more of a thing that's kind of not embedded in TV shows, but people are embedding it, if you like. And I wondered what you thought the future of TV was going to be like in, say, 1 to 5 years.
One to 5,000 years.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, God, in one year, it'd be kind of the same, but a little different. And instead of using hashtags, that everyone will be using upside down. Semicolons.
Okay.
That'll be the thing.
Okay, well, if anyone listening to this wants to tweet Robert, sorry.
Upside down.
Upside down semicolon.
I think that's what they'll be using instead of hashtags. They'll be kind of finished.
What's an upside down semicolon?
I don't know. So it's like, what is it?
It's a dot and
it's a comma at the top and a full stop underneath.
If you can do that, really annoying, I'll be bloody impressed. If not, just tweet him with a semicolon.
That's going to be an upside down semicolon.
All right, I think I'm going to do. I'm going to put a photo of an upside down semicolon on my blog. If you want to download it and tweet Robert,
I think we should. That should be the sign on instead of the hashtag. So that's in a year, but in 2 years, that will be gone.
To hashtags.
Well, yeah. It's going to be a slash and a little X.
Right.
And then in 5 years, it's kind of just be like a sort of weird. Like a, you know, in Spanish, a cedilla, the little thing under this letter C.
Oh yeah.
There'll be those. But
I thought it'd be the title. This is where we're.
The what?
The title. You know, the squiggly line.
Oh right, yeah. Could be that.
Could be that.
That's what's gonna happen.
Well, okay.
You heard it here first.
You heard it here first.
You heard it here last.
Hashtag.
That's my prediction.
Hashtag future upside down semicolon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Future of television.
I'm trying to incorporate.
Cedilla. Yeah.
I'm trying to incorporate things people can do, like interactive bits of this podcast.
Oh, I see. So did you need to?
No, that wasn't me trying it, but I feel like that's what's happened now.
Sorry. Interactive.
It's all right. So yeah, if you want to tweet Robert or Rob, whatever you want to call him, hashtag
upside down
Friday night supper.
Friday night supper.
Or
upside down Cedilla.
Upside down Cedilla. No, I was only asking because obviously in the last 5 years it's changed and it's become on demand.
Yes, it has. Yeah.
And obviously then social media's come in and it's turned into
yes,
that.
Yes, you're right.
And I just wondered.
I think there'll be like a new thing. The internet's going to go and it's all going to be done by people exchanging plasma.
I mean.
That's what
I
think.
Of all the answers I've got from that.
That's the most. That looks like it's. That's the way it's going to go.
The only reason why I feel uncomfortable now is because you're still in the bath with your eyes closed.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to say.
With buckets of plasma everywhere.
Buckets of plasma. And you keep refilling the water. Yeah. It's all right. I mean, okay. Well, I'm glad I got to ask that.
That's the future. You end on the future.
Yeah. Well, your proper pictures or productions, either way.
Whatever.
It says on its website you don't accept unsolicited scripts.
No.
Do you scout online for talent or for people to work with at all?
Yeah, I do look at new people and things. Yeah, I mean, when I'm in like writing, producing, making my show, I kind of not looking really. I'm just it's quite hard when you're filming to watch other comedy or other. Like the last thing you want to do is come home or when you're editing, and watch TV. It's quite because you're quite and you're sort of in the zone. I've been in the zone. I like officially finish my show tomorrow. Like done, everything's done. Finish the last sound bit tomorrow.
That's the 9th of June for those of you.
Yeah, series 4.
Yep.
So that'll be done. So then I'm going to be like, oh, I've done that. Wow. And then I'll probably start looking at things and catching up because I feel a bit out of the loop, you know. But yeah.
Have you got a project to go straight to after that?
Yeah, or I do.
What are you doing after Friday night?
I can't say.
Oh, sorry.
Because okay. I haven't, no, okay. haven't sort of. It's just another writing thing, with someone. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I am. I'm actually writing a new thing with someone really unexpected.
Do you want to say who?
Yeah, well, okay. Michael Heseltine.
Really?
Yes. You know, not the comedian, well, some people say, the politician.
Yeah.
Like a kind of musical.
That is, wow.
Yeah, I know it's strange, but yeah. He's actually like a very good musician, weirdly.
And as you said earlier, you used to do music, so I imagine.
Yeah. But I think he's going to write most of the music, and it's a kind of about politics.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right. Have you spoken to any channels about it yet? Or you...
No. It's like it's probably going to be a musical.
Okay.
Like a stage musical.
Oh, wow. Is that your first one?
Yep, my first one. So who knows, but yeah.
Amazing.
But yeah. It's complicated how it came about and it isn't the sort of thing I would normally do.
Right.
But I'm not like a massive musical fan, but I like music, blah, blah, blah. And someone introduced me and the last person I would have thought I would be working with was obviously Michael Heseltine. But he's got really good stories and he can sort of write weirdly. And so we're working together on this thing that is well, it's sort of quite far down the line now. So we'll sort of be rehearsing in a few weeks. Amazing. That'll be my next thing. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So have you got a theatre in mind, or have you got one?
Yeah, we have got. I can't say the one, but quite a big one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, oh, wow. Pretty big. Yeah.
That is down the line.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, it's funded and everything. It's properly funded. I don't know if I should be talking about it or not. But anyway, it's probably funded. Oh well, it's probably funded, and it's like kind of it's sort of politics and like space travel. Well, I won't say anymore.
What, okay. Well, okay, you can't leave it at that.
I'm not saying anymore. I've said it. I probably shouldn't be talking about it. Anyway, that's what I'm doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I look forward to seeing that.
Thank you very much.
I've never heard of a musical that combines those things. I mean, although there was the
boring Star Wars episode that was about a tax treaty or something. That sort of, wasn't it? The early one that was about a sort of
episode
whatever it was.
Zero.
Was it The Phantom Menace? Was that the one about?
I'm not good enough in Star Wars.
Nor am I. Okay. I'm not actually surprising myself that I remember this, but I remember going to it and they mentioned taxation in it. And I heard that and I thought, I don't want to hear the word taxation in a Star Wars movie.
No, fair enough.
It's just not what you want to hear.
You've already got rid of the willing sense of disbelief and you've already suspended
just taxation.
It. Now.
It's like I'm not listening to Moneybox Live on Radio 4. I'm watching Star Wars.
Yeah. You don't need to know about the tax...
Exactly. System of some made-up land.
Well...
There we are.
Let me know when that comes out, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes and
sure,
stuff.
Thanks. Yeah,
that'll be amazing. So these are the final quick-fire questions. They're quick-fire for me. Yep. You take as long as you want to answer them. Ask every guest them. So, yeah.
What your questions, quick-fire ones?
No, these are just the guest questions that I ask every guest.
Okay.
Regardless of who they are and where they're at and stuff. So what are the best books on comedy writing or stand-up that you've read?
Oh, I read a good one called, was it Thinking Inside the Box, which is about sitcom writing?
It's pink front cover.
Red front cover.
Yeah, also yeah. It looks pink on Amazon. Okay.
David Epstein or something, I don't know. That was good.
Okay.
That was good, yeah.
Cool.
That was a good one.
Yeah? All right, cool.
I like that.
And I keep this question deliberately ambiguous, so you can define it however you want. What's the best show you've ever seen?
40 Towers.
Okay. The one you wrote on, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the biggest mistake you've ever made and how did you overcome it?
Bloody hell, it's like a job interview. I don't know. Biggest mistake I ever made. How did I overcome? Sending someone an email that I shouldn't have and just lying my way out of it. Probably done that, yeah.
Personally,
I can't say because they work in TV. But I sent them an email that was meant to be for someone. I was about them, but I said as a joke. Kind of, it was a funny thing I noticed and I sent it to them. And then I just... instantly had to think on my feet within 5 seconds and lie my way out of it.
Amazing.
And it was a bad lie, it didn't work. That was bad, yeah.
Have they...
What are the ones... I remember like sending an email when I used to go up, I had this girlfriend years ago, and I was sent her an email. I was at Channel 4 just in the middle of work just saying, what was it? Hi, honey. How are you? *Kiss. And sent it to Peter Fincham, who ran Talkback Productions and then became head of BBC... I didn't realise I sent it to him, and then luckily he answered, because otherwise if he hadn't answered I wouldn't realise. And about half an hour later I said how are you, what are you up to or something. He replied, hard at work, why? I had to go on closer.
Did he put a kiss? Did he put two
kisses? No, he didn't. That was embarrassing, yeah.
That is embarrassing.
I'm pretty good at that, yeah. Sending emails to the wrong people.
I used to email notes to myself. If this helps you feel slightly better, I was working on an idea about how Jewish people so you can make fun of Jewish people in a way you can't with other races. So I was trying to work on an idea about how Judaism is like a gateway to other racism that you might have.
Right.
It was like a silly idea. And I accidentally emailed that to the client I was writing tweets for at the time. and they did not email back. And I rang up as soon as I found out and I explained to them what it was. And they said, just don't tweet it.
Brilliant.
That was all they said. Like,
just don't. I'm not interested.
After
25 just
minutes of me panicking on the phone to them, they just went.
That's awful. That
just don't tweet
when you
it.
Send it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What is the most interesting thing you do that nobody ever gets to see? In relation to your job, it can't be you in the bath or anything.
Eat, like when I work right often at the British Library, I get to sometimes treat myself with like they have this lemon meringue pie.
Oh. Yeah.
And that is so nice. Okay. It's like if I finish a script, I'll eat one of those. I'll eat one anyway. I mean, I have them like at least twice a week when I'm there. That's my best moment.
I should say other lemon meringues are available.
There are, yeah.
But they're not as good.
No, they're not.
Okay.
That's the most interesting thing I do.
Okay. Who would you think is the most underrated person in the TV industry?
Oh, God. Michael Heseltine.
Why?
No. No, I won't say that. Who's the most underrated person in TV? Ross Lee.
Okay. Why?
Because he's like the funniest person, and I love him. He's the funniest human.
Okay.
Yeah, Ross Lee.
Okay. What do you think is the biggest problem in the TV industry, and how would you go about solving it?
Oh God, I can't. Do I have to answer? I have to answer it.
You don't have to, but
you really need a way as well.
You would ruin a streak of other people who've answered it.
What was the question again?
What is the biggest problem in the TV industry, and how would you go about solving it?
Just get rid of like 80% of the shows on television. That'd be good.
Okay. Why?
Because they're annoying. Like the crap
just
show.
Not good. Or okay.
Just get rid of the crap ones.
So you think 80% of TV?
But then some crap shows I like. Like I will happily watch a rerun of Rosemary and Thyme because it's really boring and bland and quite funny.
Okay.
But that's okay.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. What is the best bit of advice you've ever been given? And it doesn't have to be something you've used. It could just be something you've...
I'll never forget the time, Simon, you said to me... advice. What's the best advice? With writing comedy, I think you definitely write what makes you laugh.
Mm.
What makes you, Simon, laugh? I write what makes you laugh. No, what makes you laugh? I think, yeah. Because a couple of times I've written on something, and I'm not sure this is me. It just eats into you, you know.
Okay.
It eats at you. It eats away at you.
It's like a lemon meringue.
A maggot.
Yeah, exactly.
An uncomedy lemon meringue maggot.
Oh, that can't be anything worse.
I hate those.
Can't think of anything worse. What one bit of advice would you give to a comedian or performer who wants to make a career in either writing or performing in TV comedy?
Go and write and perform.
Okay, fair enough. That's yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Okay,
sounds arrogant.
No, it's fine.
Not meant to be, but I suppose that's what you got to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Final question.
Yes.
If you could go back
to year and go on.
And kill Hitler. No, obviously not. But if you could go back to give yourself a bit of advice for when you were... I was going to say 20. I used to say 20, but I'm going to say 25 because that was when you started in the industry. So if you could go back and give yourself one bit of advice that you wish you'd been told when you started in 25, what would it be?
Buy Apple shares.
Yeah, it's fair enough. Okay.
And kill Hitler, if you can. Go back in time and kill it.
I think Hitler was gone by the time you were 25.
Yeah, he was. Oh, yeah, you're right, he was.
If you believe the online conspiracy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or it could be in Argentina.
It could be.
Who knows?
Yeah. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Thank you very much. That was a lot of fun.
Thank you. Cheers.
Goodbye.
That was Rob. His latest series of Friday Night Dinner is out in a week or so. I don't have the exact date, but if you enjoyed this episode and you want to support him, please do look out for it and bookmark the date. He's shown me a few behind the scenes snippets of it, and I've got to say it looks awesome. I've enjoyed the first three seasons, which are out on 4OD at the moment, so if you want to have a look at that before the TV show comes out, that'll get back to him and help him out, but also it'd be quite enjoyable for you. If you're someone who is not from the UK, 4OD is essentially an on-demand TV service that we have over here. I don't know if you can watch it outside the UK. I think it's only UK-based, but find it somewhere else online, borrow it, torrent it. I don't... I'm assuming he wouldn't endorse that, but I'm just saying, if you want to watch it, and he can't watch it legally there, that's the only other option, isn't it? Please do send him a tweet and say thank you for taking part in the podcast if you enjoyed this episode. Loads of guests have said to me recently that they've been getting people tweeting them saying they loved the episode that they were in, or that people got something out of what they did. If you have listened to an episode recently, whether it be this one or another one, and you did get something out of it, do tweet the guests. I put all their at handles in all the show notes. If not, just search for them. They're very findable. And say thank you. It really helps out because it means that in future, if I sort of say, can you help me get on another guest? They know that there are people listening, and they can say to the new guest or someone else I'm trying to get on, hey, he's got a really nice community of people who support him and that are supporting the project. So it helps everyone out and it scratches everyone else's back. If you'd like to support my work, the other ways of doing it are share this podcast on social media. It really helps out. About half the plays and downloads are coming from social media shares. The rest are coming from the subscribers. So do subscribe, but if you can share it, it expands the audience, and that is helpful. Also, if you can tag me
me in it. It means I can thank you for doing it because I really appreciate all the support. You can also give me an honest review in iTunes, whatever you think it's worth. 5 stars, 4 stars, 3 stars, anything less than that, don't actually bother. I don't need any more negative reviews. Not that I've got any really. But if you think it was worth 2 or 1 star, thank you for listening. But you don't need to leave me a review. I promise you, it's absolutely fine. If you want to give me a review, you can email it to me instead of putting it up publicly. That'd be great. You can also give me a one-off donation via PayPal on my website, or you can sign up as a patron on patreon.com. All of these links you can find at simonkane.co.uk or in the show notes, and just doing one or more of those things helps maintain the thing you enjoy and value. So if you're enjoying the project and you want it to continue, please pick one of those 4 things and do it. Thank you. Thank you very much for sharing. Thank you very much for rating. Thank you very much for donating, and I will see you all in about 10 days' time. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.